Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Enterprise Dish. Unfortunately, today, Aaron, we are not talking hip hop. We are talking very serious topics. A lot of events on the horizon, but I don't even want to belabor the point. I don't want to beat around the bush. I'm just kidding. You can say one word, and it's going to strike fear into a lot of IT pros' minds, and it's hafnium. I think it's how you pronounce it. I have a rich history of mispronouncing things.
I thought the word you were going to say was exchange, because that would also strike fear into a lot of IT people's hearts, right? And this whole situation, so of course we're talking about this vulnerability, zero-day exploit that was actually exploited this time, right? And we talk about these zero-day exploits all the time. When we talk about Windows updates, we talk about, oh, they did the zero-day for... Edge. They fixed this zero day on whatever else. And this is one where they, you know, made it in and ran with it. And it's looking like trouble.
Yeah.
And it's, the trouble's not over.
Right.
I mean, all these organizations, tens of thousands, are saying now it might be as many as 60,000 or more.
Yeah. It's, we knew it was bad. There's always like the barometer of like, okay, how bad is this? Like, it's, to your point, it's an Edge zero day or whatever. But when Microsoft comes out with a long blog post that has PowerShell scripts in it, and they're warning you to patch immediately, and then you see like the U.S. government like warning their people, like, you got to be patching immediately. This is a big one.
This whole notion that they took some executive action, like presidential executive action, to basically force all governmental agencies to patch their Exchange servers is certainly one indication of how gnarly this is and how big this is. And sort of the light that's on it now is sort of interesting too. Like, we know a lot more, even as of like yesterday or the day before, than we did last week when it was announced. Sadly, this has been sort of spinning up since January or something, right? I mean, I'm still kind of peeling the layers of the onion back here. But this is not like, oh, we just found this and here's this patch and go ahead and fix it. This has been sort of brewing and turning into a thing. And the exploit is multifaceted too, right? So bear with me. And I think this is an apt metaphor. I'm not sure it's exactly accurate, but I think it's close. And then we can kind of make fun of, not make fun, that's not very nice, but question sort of the Exchange on-prem versus hosted Exchange question. Yeah. But it sounds like more or less what we're talking about here is an exploit where the back door is open and you can walk in. And when you're in, you can say, this is my house. And then you can proceed to go to the fridge and take anything you want and open the filing cabinet and take all the information you want. That's about what it's looking like, is there's a way to make your way in, elevate your privileges, and take all the information you want, and they lay it all out.
Yep.
So sadly, because they laid it out and people didn't patch, the exploits have continued, and it apparently has gone beyond hafnium now as well. So this is all very concerning, and, you know, multiplies this problem and this question of, okay, a patch comes out, do you just install it and live with the downside consequence and risk of there being bugs introduced as a result of that, and you get your security fix? Or do you take the time and test and verify and validate before throwing these on there? And I'm sure there's a ton of people listening right now who are saying, hey man, we've gotten burned so many times, we weren't about to go down that road, but now here they are, and they're in triage mode, right? And so how do you win? I don't know. And back to the kind of fundamental question, is it better to bet on, you know, M365, Office 365, and leave the keys in the hands of Microsoft, who are going to take on the pain of administration and operating the data center and all of that for the cost? Or is it better to retain control? I mean, we had this conversation internally at my organizations for a long time. a long time before we pulled the trigger. And it just was like, well, you know, we got to kind of a hardware upgrade inflection point. It was like, well, maybe now's the time, and it worked out. And but I don't know. I don't know, Brad. I don't know what your take is on all that, but.
Well, my one self-fulfilling prophecy here take is that actually Steve Goodman, a writer on Petri, who exchanges his, I don't want to misspeak for him, but exchanges sort of like where he grew up is per my understanding of his background. He's been writing for us for a while. Did a really nice editorial on this topic, dating and calling things out back to, I believe it was 2012, if I remember the editorial correctly, where there's a very popular scenario where a lot of companies who are in a hybrid environment will have to retain one Exchange server because Microsoft has never provided a proper workaround between the cloud sync with Azure and then the email. So you have to have one Exchange server. And as we've just learned, and he even calls out Microsoft at one point, said, yeah, this is a really secure environment. As we now know, that's not in fact true, but he really calls out the point that, hey, like even if you wanted to dump Exchange, there's a lot of companies that couldn't because they had to retain that one on-premises server to sync in the hybrid environment that Microsoft is pushing.
Great point. Super good point. And so full catch 22, and what do you do as an IT person, right? I mean, what, how, and what, and what are your series of moves to get away from this?
Yeah.
I think one is turn off Outlook web access if you can. Mm-hmm. I know a lot of organizations depend on it, right? I mean, for some, that's kind of their client.
Yep.
So is that really a thing to do? And there's lots of good stuff. So there's some scripts out there that are available on GitHub, I think, that you can download it to see if you're vulnerable, and especially for service providers, if we have service providers who are listeners, that would be a really useful thing to give to your customers or run on behalf of your customers to suss this out. Obviously install the patch on the double, and then start, you know, looking into what might have transpired in the last, whatever, 60 days, 80 days, that might be putting customers at risk. But this is big. And again, like we've talked about, this is the future is now, right? I mean, and this goes back to our predictions for the year.
I think we have this
conversation about security, and this is the brave new world of all this kind of more or less cyber terrorism almost, where everyone's at risk and everyone's vulnerable, and it's just this ongoing dance of trying to keep things up to date and closing holes. It's unnerving.
It really is. And to the point of how many people have been impacted. I was reading, there was a bunch of good conversations, popping up on Reddit about just small companies discovering that they had been compromised through this. What it sounds like is the group that was behind this, once they kind of had the proof of concept that like this is repeatable and very easy, I'm betting that they built tooling just to do drive-bys and just they're hitting every single IP with the same sort of strings and figuring out which ones they get through and then, you know, documenting it. So it's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, and the kind of most painful part of this from a business person's perspective is it is those small and mid-sized businesses that are really motivated and even in a way required to use these enterprise type tools, but don't have the same resources as the enterprise to stay on top of all this. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, these are our customers. This is Smart Deploy bread and butter, our organizations. And I think it's a lot of our listeners who are in organizations with, you know, somewhere between 2 and maybe 20 IT people, something like that. And they're spread super thin and they have pressure to, you know, reduce headcount or control costs in all these creative ways. And this is the risk that comes back to the organization. So the plea, I think, to management and to the CIO, or in a lot of these mid-sized organizations, sometimes still it's the CFO who drives a lot of these decisions, is don't be penny wise, pound foolish.
Mm-hmm.
You know, consider allocating appropriate resources so that you've got qualified people staying on top of this and enough bandwidth, human bandwidth in IT to address this and keep pace with this. I mean, that really is the new world order. Is it's less, I mean, physical security is every bit the problem, right? We've seen an increase in you know, break-ins, vandalism, all these things in our very benign kind of suburban office setting where we are. And I don't know if it's because we're not around and it's COVID and people can exploit, or it's COVID and people are more desperate or what, but we, you know, have security footage of people trying to get in. We've had a break in. So the security question isn't, the physical security question isn't dead either, but that has to be extended with the same degree of vigilance. You've got cameras, you've got an alarm, you've got, you know, locks on all these other doors. You've got, you know, card key access here and there and everywhere. You need to bring that same level of attention to detail to IT because the vulnerabilities are multiplied in that environment. Yeah. Right. Yeah. So it's a complicated puzzle that is only getting more complicated by the day because the proliferation of these services, right? Just as we said in our last discussion, this notion that it was the SolarWinds hack, well, they weren't alone in being exploited.
Right.
So what is the future? I don't know, man. This is, I mean, it's such a dark topic.
It is
the discussion with today.
But I mean, it's the reality though, right?
It's,
I mean, it's, you can't ignore it. At every new feature, every new patch, there's always that risk. And so, man, there's the bigger challenge here is that there's no definitive good advice, because the good advice might be like, oh, just go to the cloud, right? Put it. Well, there's cost implications on that. Yeah. Not every organization can. And not to mention, that's another migration. And if you have a large operation, it's not like, all right, we're going to the cloud. You type in a PowerShell script and you're there. Like this
monumental project.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. I mean, many months, if not years. And that, to your point earlier, doesn't even solve the problem necessarily.
Right.
You may still be required.
Yep.
To keep a server running. And then what are all the many steps that you have to do to lock that down so that you reduce that? And is that still enough? Right. So this is a chase. Like I think that's the best advice here, is that organizations have to commit to being on this journey, and it's one that never stops. So poise yourself and position yourself to go down this road and stay committed to staying on the road. Right. Mm-hmm. Which means allocating the right resources to this. It may not mean necessarily you have to double headcount or something. It might mean that you, you know, just set aside a role and a few more dollars so that you can kind of do this rodeo. Right. It means prioritizing some of these projects that are long arc and expensive, and having enough resources to keep the trouble at bay while you, you know, get to that priority of migration. Once you're there, too, educate yourself and your teams on what the brave new world of the cloud really means from a security perspective. The cloud is on its own not necessarily secure by default either.
Right.
So there's another whole, you know, enchilada to unravel there and undress. It's tricky, man. I don't know.
It is. The only thing I can really kind of transition this with is, we've heard for years, and we'll always hear this, the IT budgets are always constrained. But, you know, maybe if you're going into budgeting and you have a year end of June 30th or whatever, maybe toss a few more dollars that way and not be so constrictive.
Yeah, maybe the right answer is, here is this moment in time, and we are in sort of the early tail of the pandemic. Mm-hmm. We've got good vaccines that seem to be working.
Yep.
Right, they're not making people sicker. They really seem to be doing the trick. Great. Mm-hmm. So now there's an end in sight. What does that end look like? Now's the time to start having the strategic discussions about how the business looks and works. Start making discussions about long-term work from home policy. For us, it's certainly changing, right? I mean, these teams that, you know, had flexibility now are thinking they're going to lead with remote and come into the office, you know, sparingly or for occasions or meetings, for example. What does that mean for IT? What does that mean for business culture? What does that mean for security? What does that mean in terms of your resource allocation? And put this all into this refactoring of the business, and use that to inform your IT decisions going forward, especially in light of how kind of all of cybersecurity, cyber espionage, all the risks and threats and the way that the world is going to work going forward, and that reality is, if I think if business takes the time to reframe it that way, the future is going to be more sustainable and less onerous to them, rather than being in what I perceive as largely a reactive position, right?
Yeah.
And too many IT organizations are this way, and I'm sure probably people driving and listening right now are nodding and mm-hmm. or shaking their heads.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, they have no choice.
Right.
You wait for stuff to go wrong. And many IT, good IT people realize that showing up 30 minutes early to work, putting out the fires before they really break out, makes it so everyone thinks that everything's perfect. When nothing's ever perfect, there's always a fire in the morning. It's just they're put out before anyone shows up, right? And making that more the business norm is maybe part of the solution. I don't know.
Yeah, we will see. This is far from, the book is not closed on this at all in any capacity.
Right.
We are, I don't want to say we're early days, but we're definitely more like, we're starting to understand like the true breadth of what is happening. We're still not out of this woods by any means, but as we hear more, we'll see what happens between now and when we talk next. But there's also, thanks to some leaks that actually happened just today, we learned a lot about some Microsoft upcoming events, which we did not know. Some good, some bad, but just as a quick recap, Aaron, we talked about Ignite that happened, was it last week? Yeah, I think last week. No Microsoft, no Windows stuff.
Really. A little sleepy on sort of the fronts that get us excited.
Yeah.
But there's a lot going on, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think Microsoft is certainly focused on and seizing the moment relative to everyone's intense focus on cloud migration and remote collaboration. And so all of those topics, right, remain really hot and exciting. And then sort of the flavor of the week topics of, I mean, flavor of the week in sort of the most cynical, jaded sense that there's a movement in tech right now around AI, ML, and all those things. And a lot of that's getting attention in terms of related Azure services. And it's cooking, right? I mean, if you were Microsoft, you'd probably do the same thing. The thing about Windows, I think, Brad, is that we're in a position now, and we you and I have joked, and internally we joke all too often, you know, that Windows has died five times, and it'll probably keep dying.
Yep.
But it's become the appliance that everyone has one of or multiple of. It's like the refrigerator. And we all have two now. We've got the drink fridge in the garage and the deep freezer in the garage or whatever, and then our main fridge in the house where we keep the produce and the milk and stuff. And Windows has sort of become that. We can't really live without it in the enterprise. But how much news is there and how excited are we going to get about these incremental UI improvements? Are they more a bit of a turnoff these days? I had a really interesting discussion with a software vendor this week, and they were like, we don't get it. You know, these updates come out and, you know, it's like twice a year, things fall apart for us and all our customers are having problems and we're doing these proof of concepts. It makes us look terrible. And by updates, they of course mean, you know, the major updates, the twice yearly kind of big build updates, and they have to realize they're reinstalling Windows, and this is part of the disruption that's being caused. And so it was the discussion of getting on long-term service channel and all of that. But it's really that for many of us, Windows has become a sort of appliance. There's the productivity side of it, and then for many manufacturers, there's a sort of the, it runs our app, right? Just like we talk about in healthcare for the imaging device that drives the, whatever your GE digital X-ray machine, you know, it doesn't need a lot of attention except when it breaks and then it's a crisis and no one can get anything done and on and on and on. And so how do you stay ahead of that? So that's why it's a little bit puzzling about some of this, and it might be worth, you know, more discussion around some of those manageability pieces that we take for granted now because it's so much old news, right, for so many of us. So I think that's really, really the news is with Sun Valley coming out and some good, exciting announcements, there's a huge audience that is the consumer user, that are gamers, that are really interested and concerned about this, and it moves the needle for them and changes things for them. For most of the rest of us, it's like, this any of this news is risk, right?
Yeah,
For lack
that's
of
a
a
good
better
way to put
word.
it.
And what do we do to mitigate this,
Yeah.
right? So that's why some of this next stuff, Build and Beyond, is sort of interesting. So have you heard any rumblings of what's coming in Build?
Not yet. Just for the listener perspective, it looks like Microsoft's Build Conference, which is sadly, this is going to be the second one in a row that is virtual.
For sure.
25th through the 20th. Well, the bigger reason I get upset about it, one, it's virtual because I like the in-person events, but it'll now be 2 years ago since we had drinks in your office while recording this. And I was really hoping that was just going to be a trend. And
Yeah.
yeah.
Right. That would be a nice tradition to
Yes.
uphold.
Yeah, I would
So we'll
love to
get
be in
back
the
to it.
smart to
Perhaps we have to
play.
do it virtually, you know,
Yeah.
perhaps we can do it on the show. But yeah, I agree. South by Southwest is virtual again. That's
Yeah.
sort of another frowny face, especially for something that, you know, is an entertainment oriented. To be virtual is a bit of a sad trombone. But they're having it. I wonder if this is going to become more of a permanent thing, or they'll alternate between virtual and in person,
Yeah.
because so many resources are freed up when you're
Yeah.
not, having so many people on the road and driving so many dollars into venue and catering and things like that that turn into, other things that can happen from a communication and a marketing perspective that actually are beneficial to people like us, that allow us to identify risk and do all these things, right? More communication's better. So yeah, it's a bit of a drag, but
And then it looks like we've also got Ignite happening. The fall iteration of Ignite is going to be October and 13th and 14th. Now, Microsoft hasn't officially said that this is a virtual-only event, but the fact that it's 2 days instead of the typical week really makes me think that this is going to be, at minimum, a hybrid event, if not a completely virtual.
yeah, October's a ways out. The way that things are trending where we live in the United States, anyway, is that we should be well into universal availability of vaccine, which means everyone who wants it can get it. Does that mean we've got all clear for travel? And really, Ignite has become so much of a global event, too. I mean, when we were last in Orlando and raced go-karts, I felt like every fourth or fifth person wasn't even from the United States. And certainly is always the exciting diversity of, oh, where are you from? And kind of, the regional diversity of IT opinions and attitudes. So I think that's going to be part of the inflection point on the decision there. Plenty of lead time, though, to make it in person. But to your point, it doesn't sound like a 2 day event would be worth traveling to.
Yeah, I mean, you got to think about the lead time that Microsoft has to do. I mean, they've got to get a venue, and then they want to try to obviously fill all the sponsorship booths. Then they've got to. I don't want to say it's not happening in person, but it's not going to be the Ignite that we knew from what, 2019, where there was just 30 or 40,000 people in Orlando. It's not going to be that.
Blowing it up, right? I mean, you're exactly right. I think it's pretty safe to say it'll be virtual for all those reasons, and the fact that, there is this work back of, sponsors, like you pointed out, and the venue, and all of that planning that really has to be done so far in advance, booking and committing, and many dollars, and all those things that play out, that kind of year plus lead time, not to mention the teams internally that are organizing that, right? And if you're going to do a virtual event, they've got to be getting all of that stuff going now too, and coordinating with stakeholders. So I think, yeah, you can count on that being virtual too. But maybe thereafter, we might be at that horizon where we start thinking about attending in person. So that'll be an exciting thing. So a year from now, right, essentially would be a return to in
Yeah,
person.
I
So
think
that'll be a
build might be the first sort, if we're hopefully build might be like the first traditional like Microsoft conference. We kind of all think that they might have like a press event in the fall for their Surface stuff, but those are always, 30, 40 people type
Yeah.
things in New York. But
Yeah, mainly media. Yeah, you're right. And that'll be an exciting and energetic one. And Build is so much more focused feeling than Ignite. Ignite feels like the tech eds of old, where it's really social and really kind of party oriented and all of that. And Build seems much more academic and serious to me. I don't know if that's just kind of my weird perception of things, and maybe I'm not getting invited to the right things around Build, right? But that's how it seems to me. But for that reason, even an in-person event would be rich, you know, because there's so much that's gone on, and for people to connect with those, you know, leaders who make those decisions and have that kind of in-person contact is a really neat opportunity.
That it is. And Aaron, as we head to the back of the book, as some people would say for this podcast, we got an interesting question in from Christian, and he wanted to ask you, he says, can you please ask Aaron, if he were to start over with Smart Deploy, what would he change?
Oh man. You know, that is a great question. We have the luxury of hindsight now, right? We've been at this for a while, and we also have the great good fortune of it having ultimately gone well. And, you know, we stepped on a lot of landmines along the way. And if you look back at blogs and videos that we've put out on our website, smartdeploy.com, you know, I talk about some of that. I think it's easy, and Christian might find this himself as an IT person or herself, that it's really easy to get sucked up in, like, and I was joking earlier about sort of the flavor of the week and all the trendiness in IT, and as a founder, entrepreneur person, it's easy to get sucked into that and think that, you know, we started out with this validated notion of the way to manage Windows, and all these other things came along that that kind of pulled us away from that. And the industry was saying a certain thing, and the analysts were saying a thing, and the analysts were even pushing, like saying, no, you got to go this way. You know, this is your free consulting. You've got an existential threat. Literally those words from the main people.
Yeah.
And it ended up pulling us off of course and setting us far back in a way that distraction became the existential threat and not us missing some opportunity. So I think whether Christian's considering doing a startup themselves, or if you know any other listeners are, I think the key, there's a really, really great book. And I think for anyone in IT, it's worth reading, and it's Eric Ries, The Lean Startup. It's a blue cover, and it talks about applying agile methodology to almost anything, to marketing. We use it kind of everywhere in our organization now, and the fundamental philosophy is very small tests based on the hypothesis that you validate or invalidate, and know what your next move is based on the validation or invalidation of that. And it really focuses on a kind of pseudoscientific process where you're kind of not shutting out that background noise or ignoring industry trends, but you're really focused not on making big bets, but on making small, quick bets that are much more affordable, I guess, in so many words. That's the thing I would do. I wouldn't make so many big committed bets. I would make smaller, faster bets and try to, you know, quickly invalidate, especially as a skeptic. Now I'm a much more skeptical person as a result, and focus on invalidating those, or if they prove to be true, then knowing what the truth really is, rather than, well, if that's right, then this must be true. And so here's what we should do. Here's the direction we're going to go. No. Oh, man, that's cost us months and months and, you know, many, many dollars that we'll never see again. You know, and really the time is every bit as problematic and painful of a loss as the dollars, too. So I think in short, focus is the main thing. Focus, and don't depart from that focus unless you've got a really good validated reason to depart from it.
Interesting. I find that fascinating. Because my, you know, me listening as an outsider, when were those analysts yelling at you and saying like the iPads of the world are where you need to be?
Certainly there was that you've got to be MDM. I mean, that's why the PC is dead is such a running joke for us, because we've chased in like right, left, center, like all over, over, over. And so we, every webcast we do, we get asked, do you support Mac?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, we would like to, we've taken upon ourselves proper product management, and we ask our customers if they want us to manage Mac. And what we found is a minority of our customers want us to manage a minority of their network of Macs.
Gotcha.
So a subsection of the subsection says yes, and it's just not enough, because the problem we're trying to address, especially the way that we're trying to address it, is big enough and vast enough, still being an independent software mm-hmm. company, that we really, again, have to be focused. And if we break down that focus, the risk is that we'll produce a substandard product that people won't like anyway.
Yeah.
And then where are we? We're like everyone else who's gone, right? Mm-hmm. VDI, kind of, it's there and it's going, but the hosted virtual desktop seems to be winning, and it's the monsters who are winning that battle. So there's all of this kind of cumulative way that things have played out. And it's not that the vision was wrong or that the hypothesis was wrong. It's that the execution ended up not playing out the way everyone thought, and not the way that the analysts want. And the analysts have a very low stake in this game.
Right.
Right. It doesn't cost them very much to be wrong. Right. And they might say, hey, well, we were right. Look, here it is.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, tell that to Mocha 5.
Mm-hmm.
Tell that to Winova. Tell that, you know, I mean, we can go down the list of all these organizations that aren't here anymore. So, ouch, right?
Very, very much ouch. Well, Aaron, I think we are about at time. I want to thank you for just diving into one to that story. That story was fascinating. I could probably record a whole podcast about that because Maybe. That's a really, really fun topic. But Hafnium, we've got events, we've got just a lot going on. And for everybody, make sure you hit the subscribe buttons down in your favorite podcast player or wherever you're listening or watching us. We will be back in a month. We will see what changes, and hopefully everything's just a little bit better.